The Agriculture Competitiveness Green Paper, launched by the federal government this week, fails to mention climate change, but dangerous global warming still troubles scientists and farmers. The United Nations Climate Change Conference in Copenhagen 5 years ago settled on trying to limit the global temperature rise to 2 degrees Celsius by 2050. And research shows it's possible for that to happen alongside a thriving Australian economy. Anna Scarbeck is the Executive Director of Climate Works Australia, a group set up by the Meyer Foundation. She says we, along with 14 other countries, are looking at decarbonising the economy by going electric.
Essentially because it's one source of energy that we know how to reduce the emissions from. So really the game is looking at how can we replace the sources of fuel that currently create emissions with sources that don't. And with electricity, we've already invented ways to have zero carbon electricity with renewables or nuclear or very low carbon electricity with carbon capture and storage. With gas use, it's much harder to eliminate the emissions from gas. There are some sectors, though, where we'll still need to use gas. And in fact, gas is more attractive than something like diesel fuel. So in every sector we look at, can we use a source of fuel that emits less, ideally zero, or at least less than the existing?
So what you're saying is what, houses can go across to electric, transport can go across to gas. Is that sort of a scaling down?
That's right, yes. In buildings, it's fairly easy to switch to low-carbon electricity. In transport, cars can switch to battery-operated electric cars. With trucks, that's much harder, but we can switch to gas-fired trucks, and that is a less emissions-intensive fuel than the existing diesel use for trucks, for example. What the research is showing is that Australia, in fact, has the ability to achieve more than 5% using technologies that are already invented, and that if we achieve more than 5% before 2020, then the acceleration that's needed beyond 2020 is not as great. So essentially, the less we do now, the faster we'll have to move in the next decade. So it's in our interests to try and achieve much more than 5% in this decade so that we can move at a more measured pace the next decade.
A recent study by Ernst & Young has shown that 90% of Australians have responded to either wanting to switch or have switched to solar PV for their homes. Is that indicating that consumers are moving ahead of the policy?
It's both, I think. The policy has certainly helped because it's helped bring the price down and that makes it more accessible for consumers. But I think the uptake has shown that there is great interest by consumers, and I do think it's well understood that emissions are causing a problem, and even if people aren't aware of the exact details, they realise that we must learn to produce less emissions over our lifetimes.
One of the long-term things that will ameliorate carbon emissions is forestry plantations. So what do you cite there that has to happen so that we can meet this bigger goal in the end?
In Australia, we've got a fantastic opportunity for doing very large-scale carbon forestry sequestration. So that is sequestering CO2 in the atmosphere through planting large-scale plantations. It's in fact essential for Australia if we want to live in a net zero carbon economy, but it's an economy that we recognise now. So we have manufacturing, we have mining. If we want to keep those, they will continue to produce emissions. Even after we've switched where we can to low carbon electricity, there are residual emissions from a range of sectors. That's where carbon forestry comes in, and it can absorb those emissions. We've got the land mass. New research from CSIRO shows that with improved agricultural productivity, we can maintain or increase our agricultural output and use some of that land for carbon forestry. So we know we can do it, but it will need a policy push because it's at much greater scale than we're currently doing.
So the government has a plan at the moment for 20 million trees to be planted and tenders for how to do that. So is that some way to doing the carbon forestry?
It's a good start. It's a good start. The industry needs to scale up, and for carbon forestry to offset Australia's industrial emissions, we will need it at a much greater scale. And so that scale, that that increase must start immediately.
You're a director on the Clean Energy Finance Corporation. You were rescued recently when there was a threat to your funding. You were going to be abolished, but the crossbenchers supported you in the Senate. What is your success to this point, and where are you off to?
The Clean Energy Finance Corporation has invested almost $1 billion in clean energy projects, and that's been matched by over two times that investment from the private sector. Those investments have reduced carbon emissions while returning a profit to the government through the funds, and those investments have created local jobs, local clean energy sources, and across a range of technologies, solar, wind, biogas, and also energy efficiency in terms of upgrading and improving our buildings. It's been really exciting to see the technology providers coming forward, and also the finance providers. All the big four banks have invested in Clean Energy Finance Corporation projects, and the CFC's role is to catalyse the private sector to continue that activity.
How disappointing is it, though, to hear the Prime Minister talk of coal as king, and to see perhaps criticism of the ANU for investment decisions that get rid of coal and other high energy investments?
Our research and others shows pretty clearly that climate change is very damaging for humanity, including the poor people that certainly have a right to be lifted out of energy poverty. And I'm excited that our research shows that we can lift people out of energy poverty with clean energy sources, and that Australia can have a prosperous economy even when a climate change constraint means that coal will have to be a reduced share of that future.
But it's not just electricity production, of course, it's our water use and managing of the dams and irrigation. What does a water industry need to do to manage their emissions?
Like all industries, the prospect of a carbon-constrained future means we should look for low-carbon sources of energy. And the water sector is a big user of energy. That, of course, is really important for our economy, and it fuels irrigation and water supply and sanitation, of course, so we need it. But there are low-carbon electricity sources now that are coming down in cost. And so I would encourage the industry to look for those in any new investment that they're making, and also to look at their other non-energy emissions, such as methane that is produced through water treatment and is also a byproduct in some agricultural activities. Some of that methane gas can be reharvested and created and turned into energy. So there's some really exciting innovations, and having a net zero carbon goal in mind when thinking about long-term investments will encourage us to take up those new innovations more quickly.
Anna Scarbeck speaking with our reporter Serena Locke in Sydney. Now, imagine being miles away from home and being able to log in and see exactly where your animals are, be alerted if a cow starts giving birth or a pipe leaks. It makes you think the old sayings of